traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit energycitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
You're listening to the Oil and Gas This Week podcast with Mark LaCour and Paige Wilson. This is the show for busy oil pros who quickly want to keep their finger on the pulse of the industry.
You're listening to the Oil and Gas This Week podcast brought to you by API. This is the show for busy oil pros who want to quickly keep their finger on the pulse of the industry. Thanks for joining us for episode 342.
342. Wow.
I know.
You know, this year's been interesting. The amount of speaking gigs that people have reached out to me, it's probably my best year ever. So you and I were at the Gas Compression Association just a while back in Galveston. That was fantastic.
Fun. Yeah.
And then this week I'll be at the Human Performance and Action Conference in New Orleans. We'll be at the BP Producer Forum in May. Then I'll be at the National Investment Tournament of Champions in May. And then I'll be at the California Fuels and Convenience Alliance Summit in September. People, if you want myself to come deliver a keynote or any of our experts, you want Paige and I to come bring this podcast live or any of our podcasts, reach out to me. Happy to share the details.
Awesome. So we got a review. It's 5 stars. My go-to commute podcast. Hey, y'all. I just wanted to say I love the show. I am a recently graduate employed at a medium-sized offshore E&P company in the Woodlands. I happen to love the snarky comments and tend to agree with the points on climate change. The information is informative and up-to-date and makes my 45-minute drive to work bearable. The only negative I have for y'all is that the show is only updated weekly. I wish I could listen to it every day. Keep the good work and drill, baby, drill. From Austin. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Austin. Dude, look, we just got to a point where we can deliver weekly episodes on track. Paige, we have a lot, and I mean a lot, I mean a lot of people ask us to turn this into a daily show. There's no way.
We don't have the capacity.
We have a company run. We have all kinds of other stuff going on.
We have other podcasts of our own. So,
but we do appreciate, I mean, that's a huge compliment. People want to listen to us every day. I'm not sure I would want to listen to us every day.
No, I'm good.
Yeah. However, a daily show is in the works. Now, in the podcast world, that's the holy grail. It is just about impossible to pull off.
That sounds miserable.
It's on our list. We may never do it, or we may do it. If we do it, we'll make sure we let you know. Hey, before we get to news stories, this is breaking news. This is Sunday, April 14th. Yesterday, Saturday, Iran attacked Israel with a bunch of drones and missiles. Israel's war technology, with a lot of help from the U.S. and Israel's other allies, was able to defeat most of those munitions. However, Israel is contemplating a counterattack. Current U.S. administration says they're going to stay out of it. Paige, this is bad.
They've already backpedaled and been like, oh, my bad.
The whole reason I'm bringing this up, not only is it breaking news, but it's also, I expect Monday the market to be exploded just in the perception.
Oh, yeah.
The oil prices to go through the roof. Let's hope calm minds prevail. However, I would not be surprised if all that war breaks in the Middle East. And if that happens, it could change the entire dynamics of this industry. So we will absolutely keep you posted.
Okay. Schlumberger announces Champion X deal because I refuse to say SLB.
This is a great deal for everybody. It's really interesting. One of the things that basically Schlumberger is buying by this deal is the ability for production, improved production. Instead of concentrating with this acquisition on drilling, instead of concentrating on end of life with transport, with anything else, they're actually trying to increase production. And Champion X comes at a very important time in the industry because with their subject matter expertise around artificial lift, chemistry solutions, and all the technology that helps production, this is a great fit in Schlumberger's book of tools. And there's also a growing demand, as we know, for more technology, especially AI type of operations, which Champion X is also really known for, as well as Schlumberger. I think it's cool, Olivia LaPue, SLB Liberty's CEO has made a statement basically saying our customers are seeking to maximize their assets while improving efficiencies in the production reservoir recovery phase of their operations, which is exactly what I just rattled off. Champion X, we know that company well. I know them well. They have a very strong leadership component. Hopefully, a lot of those people stay on because that will just benefit SLB, especially Schlumberger's market here in the U.S. Schlumberger dominates in the Middle East. They struggle here in the U.S. This should give them a leg up on their competition, Baker Hughes and Halliburton and Weatherford. Let's see, what was this? I think this was an all-stock deal. Yeah, it was an all-stock deal, which is about a $400 million savings in the first 3 years post-closing. Now, this deal is not done yet. It has to go through the standard stuff. All these deals this site has to go through. But I think this deal with SLB or Schlumberger acquiring Champion X benefits everybody, including the industry. We will keep an eye on this.
All right. Pemex oil platform fire claims at least one life.
Okay. We reported on this. Reported this exact platform having methane leaking, having natural gas leaking. When this incident first happened, which, by the way, before we go any further, moment of silence for the person that lost their life. When this incident was first reported, Pemex said that nobody was died, that they had some minor injuries and they had it under control. Well, that's not true.
Clearly.
Nine workers were injured. One unfortunate individual lost their life. As far as I know, they still don't have complete control of the fire on that rig. And this is just another indication that something needs to be done with Pemex, to the point that two podcasters on the other side of the Gulf of Mexico are talking about how your safety violations need to be looked into before somebody gets hurt or dies. And then a month later, somebody passes away because of this. This is utterly ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. And back when my dad worked out there, it made me really uncomfortable seeing all this stuff happen out there because I kind of went, okay, is my dad going to be safe?
Yeah. This platform is in shallow water, has produced about 200 barrels or was producing about 200 barrels per day. For all I know, they're still trying to keep production. I don't know. I hope they're not. I hope that well shut in the people off that rig.
You would hope so.
But this is not the first time there's been a Pemex issue like this in the Gulf of Mexico. Back in July last year in the Bay of Campeche, which is the same field, two workers got killed. I think about a half a dozen others got hurt. Then 2021 in the same area, that offshore gas processing plant literally had an explosion killing five people and shut in 400,000 barrels per day. And that was the second fire of that processing plant. Come on, Pemex. You have to do better. There's no reason people should be getting hurt or people should be losing their lives because you're not doing what you need to do. There's not much we can do here from the U.S. other than not buy their products, which actually wouldn't affect much of anything, but just prayers to the families that are involved with this. And like I said, if you're listening to Pemex, you have to do better. This is unacceptable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Biden administration's U.S. initial SAF subsidy model to raise climate hurdle for ethanol.
This is an interesting article. SAF, sustainable aviation fuel. I have huge issues with sustainable aviation fuel because it's not sustainable and it's not the best for airline industry itself. However, the airline industry gets the tax breaks, the PR recognition from running something that is air quote sustainable.
Honestly, Boeing needs all the help it can get right now.
Well, this is not aircraft this week. We're going to leave poor Boeing alone. Although you and I both are flying a lot this year.
Yeah.
I wish you wouldn't have brought that up.
Sorry.
But here's what's interesting. Our current administration actually issued a model for sustainable aviation fuel and ethanol. What's really interesting about this is that a lot of the ethanol production, now remember, ethanol is produced from corn. All that corn in the U.S. is grown in the middle of the country. The subsidies provide income for the corn farmers. So they're very pro-ethanol, even though ethanol is not really good for anything other than having a cocktail in the evening. It's create this kind of gray market with renewable fuel credits. It's not good for the engines. It forces companies to buy a competing product that's subpar. However, here's where it gets really interesting. So in order to get these sustainable air fuel subsidies, the producers must demonstrate, must prove that their feedstock is 50% lower in emissions than jet fuel. Guess what? The sustainable aviation fuel that's being created right now is not. They're going to miss that threshold. So it doesn't meet our current administration's rules to get the subsidies, which means this may disappear. Then there's also environmental penalties for how the land is used for fuel instead of the land being used for food, which I 100% agree with. Then the environmentalists, and I am an educated environmentalist, I am an environmentalist, and usually when I say environmentalists on this show, it's the green wackos. Actually, this group of environmentalists I 100% agree with, because one of the things they're saying is that in order to meet these standards and to get these subsidies, you have to meet certain options under the Clean Fuel Protection Credit, which is 45Z if you want to actually go look it up. And part of that is that the corn that is sourced to make this ethanol has to be sourced from farmers using sustainable agricultural techniques. Now, if you know anything about growing corn, it is one of the worst crops for the soil.
Oh, yeah. You told me about that.
It. Corn is not natural. It came from maize, which is a species of grass, which was natural. We have selectively bred it to the point that it's not legit. It can't self-reproduce. If you grow corn, it will grow, it will reproduce, but the kernels fall straight down. They're not spread, and that's not sustainable. It's very much a man-made, high intensity as far as the nutrients in the soil crop, which is great for mankind, but it's not great to try to fuel airlines with.
Yeah.
So part of this is that they have to maintain sustainable agricultural techniques, which means they have to use cover crops, efficient organic fertilizer applications, and the right tilling of the soil to protect water. Well, none of the ethanol is produced from the corn. You have to meet these standards. So in a weird, bizarre, a Twilight Zone twist of fate, our current administrations with these sustainable aviation fuel subsidy models are going to actually not qualify the ethanol that's being produced and the other biofuels for sustainable aviation fuels under their own rules and regulations. This may actually put some of this, if not all of this, out of business economically, which actually would be good for all of us. This is weird week, right? But you know me, right? When our current administration does something I think is dumb, I say it. When they do something that makes sense, I give them props. I'm giving them props for this. I hope they stick to this.
Okay. Give them props.
You don't know what to say, huh?
No, not really. Biggest North Sea oil find in decades to be drilled for the first time.
Isn't this awesome?
Yes,
news?
It is.
Let me tell you, you've heard me talk about this before. Right now in Europe, they have the windfall tax at 75%, 75 cents of every dollar that the oil and gas industry makes in Europe right now goes to the government. And guess what? This is the energy that Europe needs. This is also so much energy because this find is so big that it would provide energy for other parts of the world as well. It may not happen because of the windfall tax rate. We know it's there. The companies involved actually have already proven the reservoirs. They've actually started drilling to go into production, but they're waiting to see what's going to happen with the windfall tax. Now, this is 80 miles east of Shetland, which, if you know that area of the world, that's right near the Kraken oil and gas fields, which are known historically. This is in the North Sea. We're having a battle, as we always do. And you have the environmentalists that are saying that we don't need to drill here because it's going to increase methane and carbon dioxide release in the atmosphere and destroy the planet with the climate catastrophe. And you're having the common people in the UK go, I am tired of paying electricity bills this high. I'm tired of paying this much money for fuel. We have the solution right under our feet. Why are we not drilling? There's part of the UK government that's going, you know what? We've issued the permits to drill here. We're going to promote this. We're going to help you make sure this goes into production. And you're looking at 350 million barrels of oil. So they won that production license. However, with all the political wrangling, it may not make fiscal sense. So all of those hydrocarbons, which the world needs and Europe really needs,
what a waste of time too.
Sit there. We'll see what happens. That is so much recoverable hydrocarbons in a part of the world where we have the infrastructure to easily and safely and environmentally responsibly bring it to market. We know the North Sea inside and out.
Right.
This is easy peasy. If anything, in oil and gas is easy peasy. And yet, it may not happen because of
so
what's going on. We will also keep an eye on this.
Yeah, clearly. All right. ESG Watch. New satellites mean oil and gas companies will have no place to hide on methane emissions.
So you'd think I would say this sucks. They're using satellites to snoop on producers. In some ways, I like this. I do have a caveat I'll get to a little bit later. But basically, the world has developed satellite technology that we can actually see methane in real time. And actually somewhat small amounts of methane in the grand scheme of things, which means that we now have a very effective way that we can scan huge parts of the planet and see if things like pipelines are leaking, if oil wells are leaking methane, if any type of production facility, anything with natural gas, is it leaking? We can see it. The cool thing about that is there's three things that's really cool about that. Number one, a lot of times this leakage happens, nobody knows, and it's costing the producers money or the pipeline companies money. By using satellites to spot it, we can, hey, heads up, you're leaking. Oh, thank you. Now I've made more money. So that's a great thing. The second thing, regardless of your views on climate change, let's not flare natural gas. We're past that, right?
Yeah.
Let's put it in the system where we can. This helps with that as well. And then the third thing is the old way of checking, especially pipelines, was to send somebody a truck to go drive a pipeline, which was dangerous. Now you don't have to do that. So in the grand scheme of things, this is great. Now, here's my one caveat. The makers of the technology make it look like it's easy to spot methane using satellite technology. Basically, they're bouncing infrared radiation and they're measuring the return bounce and a certain frequency. They know it's methane. Not really. They know it's a carbon group.
Uh-huh.
But methane has one, ethane has two, butane has three, propane has four, methep, butane, hexep, octanone, dec, right?
Right.
Three carbon groups. The technology can't tell the difference between methane, ethane, propane, and butane.
Huh.
Now, common sense tells you that if it's leaking out of a natural gas pipeline, it's most probably methane, right?
Right.
Common sense tells you that it's leaking out of a well site in West Texas somewhere, it's most probably methane. However, the way they say the ironclad can guarantee that it's methane is not legit. And this is one of my things about technology and about business in general. Tell the truth.
Right.
Tell the truth. I'm actually okay with this because the odds of somebody leaking butane or propane is very slim because those are high value subparts of the natural gas mix that people capture and sell on the market. They're not going to intentionally leak that to the atmosphere. It costs them money.
Right.
However, in this article in Reuters, and if you talk to the technology providers, they will tell you they can absolutely guarantee it's methane, and they can't. They can just guarantee that's either methane, ethane, propane, or butane. Uh-huh. Anyway, I like this. We'll follow this as well.
U.S. Interior Department finalizes rule to reduce oil and gas waste on public and tribal lands.
Once again, I will give our current administration half props for this. I think they're overstepping their bounds a little bit. I also think this really, at this level, that the U.S. Interior should not be involved. This is something the EPA should be involved with. The Bureau of Land Management, U.S. Department of Interior, they're not experts at environmental impacts. Actually, in some ways, they're horrible at it. They're very political. Now, our EPA currently is very political as well. However, I think this is something that should fall under EPA. However, what's going on is that this is the final rule from BLM, and they're trying to basically curb the waste of natural gases, like I spoke about in the last article. And they're doing this specifically on federal and tribal lands. And the reason that's so important is, if you don't know this, the biggest money maker in the U.S. from oil and gas production is not Chevron. It's not independent operators. It's the U.S. government
yeah.
for all the federal leases. That's a lot of land to manage. And I do think that we need to have rules and regulations about intentional, unintentional methane leaks. The tribal lands, not so much. And please, no hate mail. I love you indigenous people. I'm part Cherokee myself. So is Spanish,
yep,
actually.
Same.
But it's such a small percentage that that's not the big picture here. Also, the other thing is we have the technology now, like I said in the early article with the satellites, that we're able to actually do this. And this basically reduces waste, increases efficiencies. It generates additional revenue. Now, here's where the tribal lands come in. The tribal lands, even though there's a smaller piece, if somebody's leaking methane or leaking natural gas, they're not as getting as much money as they're supposed to get, as described in the joint venture legal documents. So in some ways, you could almost look at this as a way to generate a little extra revenue or make sure they get the revenue they were guaranteed, which I'm totally fine with. And the other thing is this rule, which is passed, updates a 40-year-old regulation.
Right. Yep.
Anytime you have a regulation that's that old, it does need to be updated. Like I said, I think they went a little bit too far. I really think the EPA needs to be doing this. But if the EPA did, I don't know if they could actually do it any better. The one piece I don't like about this is how it's tied into the Inflation Reduction Act rules.
Of course.
So royalties, that's a different subject. But basically, we need to make sure that the mineral owners are compensated properly. We need to make sure we're not dumping natural gas into our atmosphere. And then finally, we need to make sure that any rules and regulations that everybody has to follow are modernized. And this basically does it. So that's why I said half props.
Ah, got it. Yeah. Okay. U.S. petroleum product exports set another record high in 2023.
You want to guess what part of those petroleum exports was the main growth driver?
What?
I said it earlier. Propane.
Oh.
Which sounds like, what is the cartoon?
Oh, King of the Hill.
King of the Hill. Sounds like we should have King of the
propane
Hill.
Propane and propane accessories.
Yeah. Anyway, propane exports from the U.S. grew 14% in 2023, which is substantial. A lot of the world uses propane for fuel, which is good. It's easy to export. Here in the U.S., you think of propane when you're grilling on a gas stove in that tank. Most of the world
gas stove?
Yeah. Sorry, gas barbecue pit. Maybe a gas stove. I don't know how you're grilling outside. We're both from South Louisiana. We've seen stoves outside that people use. That's not seriously, that's pretty common.
I know.
But
anyway,
gas grills. Those 20-pound tanks you see in the U.S., imagine tripling that. And that's how propane is exported in a lot of the world. We produce it here. We put it in refillable huge cylinders, about 60 gallons, if I remember right. We ship the propane all over the world. They put it in 60-gallon containers at the port at wherever country they're in. And the people pick those up and they run their house on it, hot water, cooking, all that stuff. This is good that we're actually exporting it. That's a lot of propane. I said 14%. That's over 1.6 million tons of propane, which is a record high for the U.S. Then most of that propane's going to Asia. Now, the cool thing about that is that if they weren't using propane, they would be burning wood or cattle dung, which is not good for anybody. Mm. And then the wood comes from where? Forest. A lot of people around the world cut down forests so they can have enough fuel to cook their food and heat their homes. By us exporting propane, they don't have to cut down forests, which then helps the environment. The second biggest export was actually distillates, and the number one, of course, was gasoline. This is good. I like that the U.S. is exporting a lot of refined products, including things like finished motor gasoline, propane, and all those other benzene-type things. We do this well. We produce the cleanest, whatever you want to talk about, propane molecule, the cleanest benzene molecule, the cleanest gasoline molecule in the world. So it's good the U.S. is exporting these to other countries. And bottom line is, it's preventing some forests from being cut down, which is good for everybody.
Right. Okay. Next up, Chevron leaves Myanmar.
I don't blame you, Chevron. Everybody's leaving Myanmar. And what happened is there was a major coup back in 2021. Quite honestly, it's pretty brutal. Well, you have to beat that out. Pretty brutal conditions over there. The military that's in charge have had a lot of human rights violations. It's basically a humanitarian crisis. People don't have medical supplies. If you're the wrong tribe or the wrong religion, you're hunted down ruthlessly. You disappear. People are thrown in pits and left to rot. It's just a mess. This is part of Chevron exiting Myanmar, and they're doing it a very organized way, which is good. This keeps people from getting hurt and makes sure they don't miss anything. Now, I will say this much. Total also exited. Total just said, I'm out of here.
Bye.
Chevron's taking a little bit more time to do it. They've transferred ownership of their stake into a company that's at least paying its people.
Yep.
But the continuing degradation of the human rights in Myanmar is just horrific. Chevron needs to get out of there. Total did it quickly. Chevron took a little bit more time to make sure they did it well. This is a mess. My heart and prayers go out to the people in that country because it is just really, really bad. And once again, I don't blame Chevron at all from exiting.
Okay. Next up, TCC responds to EPA ruling.
Yeah. So this is, if you don't know what ethylene oxide and chlorine are, it's basically two petrochemicals that are used to make a lot of stuff. This is the Texas Chemical Commission. That's what TCC is. And basically, the EPA has said that these two petrochemicals, ethylene oxide and chlorine, need to be reduced by a pretty substantial amount. And they're measuring at what they call the fence. They call it fence line monitoring. So basically, the petrochemical plants that make these two compounds, there's monitoring at their border, at their property line border, and that's where the EPA is measuring it. This is something that needed to be done. There's arguments back and forth about what levels are safe and what levels aren't. And then there's a little bit of misconstrued science. In this article, they're talking about how both ethylene oxide and chlorine are naturally found in the human body, which is technically true. It is in such small amounts that it's hardly even measurable. And just because you find it naturally in the human body doesn't mean it's safe.
Yeah.
You actually naturally find lead in the human body. Trust me, you get a little too much lead in your bloodstream, things go south really quickly,
yeah.
Right? Texas Chemistry Council is working directly, making sure that this is based on sound science and that the regulations don't overstep their bounds. They don't overstep their bounds. This is one of the things EPA is doing right now that probably needed to be done a while ago.
Right.
It's good for everybody, including the people in the local communities that work around these petrochemical plants. I would really like to see somewhere in the next 50 years that all of the petrochemical plants here in the U.S. have zero organic emissions, like zero. We can do it. We have the technology to do it. All these organic compounds, many of which are at certain levels are hazardous to human health, we could get to the point where there's zero emissions. And we're getting there. Trust me, we're way better than a lot of other countries in the world.
Right.
But this is just a step in the right direction.
Okay. Next up, Russia destroys largest power plant in Ukraine's Kyiv region.
I thought things were real before. Both these companies are about broke.
Countries.
Both these countries are about broke. both of these countries are running out of soldiers. In fact, Ukraine just changed their rules for basically the draft. It is pretty severe now. Unless you're in a hospital, you're not eligible to draft in the Ukraine because they've run out of frontline people. The problem with that is they don't get time to train them, so they're not effective soldiers, which means they unfortunately get hurt or die quicker, and they can't actually move the needle as much as the original highly trained, highly experienced Ukraine forces did in the very beginning of this war. Ukraine's also suffering from a shortage of ammunition. A lot of it has to do with corruption. Many countries, including the U.S., have dumped a lot of money, have donated a lot of supplies, including ammunition, to Ukraine. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, that turned up into cash into people's pockets, not actually going to the frontline soldiers.
Imagine
but
that.
But this article is, this was a huge Russian missile attack, destroying the largest power plant in the Ukraine. This is, of course, Vladimir Putin's efforts to basically subdue Ukraine to fall under his thumb. I don't know how much longer they can keep this up either side. Like I said, I think soon. Well, I don't know. With what's going on right now with Israel,
Lord
knows what's going to happen. But before what happened with Israel yesterday, I would say that soon these countries are going to come to some type of agreement. It's not going to be a peace treaty.
If there's anything left.
Yeah. But basically both sides are going to claim some type of victory and the warfare should stop. Now I'm not so sure. Ukraine has no soldiers left, no weapons left, no money left, no ammunition left. Russia's broke. They do have weapons left, but the weapons they're using are antiquated or old.
Mm-hmm.
This needs to stop. Will it? Paige, I don't know.
Honestly, anything can happen right now.
This is as weird a year in some ways as 2020 was. But we will keep an eye on this, people.
No, it's just like 2020 happened and just never stopped.
It's never stopped. Well, 2022 wasn't that bad. 2021 was weird.
It's been weird for me ever since.
Okay.
So anyway, China exports gasoline using blockchain, an unprecedented move.
I love this. You know what's cool about blockchain? The coolest thing about it is that you can't cheat people.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. And if you cheat people, you know exactly who did it, when, and where. This is great. This is the first time Centicorp has successfully completed a shipment of gasoline from China to Singapore using blockchain technology. Our old buddies at Data Gumbo pioneered a lot of the blockchain technology for smart contracts, which is exactly what's being used here. This is great. We need more blockchain technology. Actually, we don't need it. We have it. And the coolest thing is this industry is very slow in adopting things. Like it takes 50 years. I saw the Iron Roughneck come out when I was a little boy, and it wasn't adopted until after I was out of the Marine Corps in college, right?
Really?
It was probably 20 years between time
that makes sense. That tracks.
And it was adopted.
Yeah.
But blockchain was literally adopted, I'm not going to say overnight, but in like 2 years, which to this industry is unbelievable.
Yeah,
fast.
That's
The Blockchain for Energy Council includes all the big guys, Saudi Aramco, API, ExxonMobil, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, EQT, Devon, Schlumberger, Chesapeake, Pioneer, Resources, Hess, Equinor, Repsol, blah, 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 blah. So the whole industry is bought into this. Now it's cool to see the nationalized oil companies buying into this. Bottom line, the more we do with this, the more we remove corruption and the more efficient we get with moving energy around the world, which literally just benefits everybody. I would have lost money on this if you would have told me that China, of all countries, one of their state-owned companies would have used blockchain to make sure there's no corruption in a large gasoline transaction. I would have said you're crazy, but I would have been wrong. Once again, I'll give props to China, which I don't know if I've ever done that.
It's okay. We're probably blocked there anyway.
Sinu Kim for using blockchain to make sure that everything was supposed to happen happened, that it was legal, that nobody got ripped off. This is wonderful. We need more and more and more of this in the world.
Okie doke. Investors dump renewable energy funds amid U.S. policy uncertainty.
Okay. I'm going to ask you a trivia question.
Oh, God.
You'll probably get it right. Guess what type of fund has booked the biggest quarterly loss or withdrawal ever in the first quarter of the year in U.S. history? Guess what type of fund have basically lost the most money in the first quarter ever? What type of fund? Guess.
ESG.
It is pretty close. Renewable energy.
Huh?
So if you look at the renewable energy portfolio in the U.S., the funds that finance lists have booked the biggest quarterly withdrawal ever in the first quarter of this year, which means they lost more money than any other type of investment ever in the history of the U.S.
Wah.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I love renewables. What I don't love is politicians who don't understand business or science or energy pushing renewables faster than the market can adapt to it, which is exactly why we're all in an energy shortage. They did this all for political gains, a lot of it for personal gains. You're having this backlash. I tell people this all the time. We're in renewable, what I call 2.0. Renewable 1.0 was in the 70s when we went through all this exact same this, including electric cars, solar, wind. It all disappeared because it didn't make fiscal sense. It didn't make sense from a physics or science point of view. It's come back based upon politics. Once again, it doesn't make fiscal sense in a lot of places. Now, this renewable 2.0 is going to force the renewable industry to learn how to make a profit instead of live off subsidies. When they come back, which I call renewable 3.0, which will be in about 15 years, then the renewable industry will be rock solid, will be profitable. Hopefully by then we can quit this back and forth between hydrocarbons and renewables. It's all just freaking energy, people. Different energy production techniques make different sense in different parts of the world. You're not going to build a hydroelectric dam in the middle of West Texas because there's no water. At the same time, solar doesn't do really well in New England when half the year is covered with cloud cover, right? Let's have some common sense here. Hydrocarbons and nuclear and geothermal and wind and solar all can be damaging to the environment. All of them can be used environmentally responsibly. Anyway, the renewable energy funds have lost the most money ever. Even the ETFs, exchange traded funds, lost $4.8 billion in renewables. This is just a blow to the renewable industry. Unfortunately, I hate to see people lose their jobs, which is happening now. It's going to happen at a much faster pace in the renewable space. I don't ever want to see my lose a job. However, this market needs to correct itself. And listen to me, no matter what we're talking about, the market always has more power than anything else, than politics, than laws, than taxation, than windfall taxes. The market will always eventually correct itself. And that's what's going on right now. Let's hope that there's some common sense that prevails with all this loss of money in the renewable energy section right when we're going through a presidential election. It's just going to be rough for the renewable energy. And I hate to see it. I really do. Because renewable energy people, we know how it is. We go through this every 10 years. We know what pain looks like. We know what it looks like when companies go out of business and people lose their jobs. We don't wish that on anybody. We deal with it. We don't wish it on you. So let's hope that once this is over with, once we get through this presidential election, whatever's going on in the Middle East gets leveled out. Let's come back and let's use renewable energy where it makes perfect sense, which is in a lot of places.
All right. Last one. North Sea countries team up for infrastructure protection.
It took me a little while of reading through this to understand what was really going on. So on the surface, you've heard about Nord Stream 2 attack. You've heard about the subsea cables, other pipelines that were attacked in North Sea. The countries there that are dependent, Norway, Belgium, the Netherlands, Germany, UK, Denmark, basically came together and they signed an agreement in cooperation protecting all the infrastructure, not just energy infrastructure, but things like telecom, fiber optics, electrical distribution, gas, oil, all the infrastructures in the bottom of the ocean over there, that part of the world, because it affects all of those countries. This agreement, you go, okay, it makes sense. They're coming together. They're going to provide some oversight. They're going to provide some redundancy. If something happens, the countries will chip in together, help get it fixed quicker than the individual countries could do on their own. And then I went back and looked, Paige, and it's like, subsea fiber optic cables, oil and gas pipelines, electrical interconnectors. What does all that have to do with besides making sure the countries have what they need? Defense.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back, look at the list of countries. Norway, Belgium, the Netherlands, Germany, UK, Denmark. These are all members of NATO. Now, let me tell you what I figured out. Basically, by bringing all of this together and falling under the NATO umbrella, this ensures that if any type of intentional or accidental damage is done to any of the infrastructure in North Sea that I just rattled off, because it touches national defense, you will have a NATO response. Who's the biggest member of NATO?
The U.S.
Who has the biggest Navy in the world? The U.S. Who has the ability to wipe countries off the face of the earth and turn them to a sea of glass? The U.S. So this is a very smart move. What started off what I thought was a civil contract is actually a way to take all this infrastructure and put it under NATO military protection, which quite honestly needed to have happened. This is a good move. It was very strategic. And like I said, it took me a little while to figure out the whole defense part of this, but this needed to be done. I pity the fool.
All right, Mr. Leghorn,
I pity the fool who now wants to mess with any infrastructure in the North Sea. Is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
Where are we on the rig count?
The United States is down 3 at 617. Canada's up 5, 141. And internationally, we're up 13 at 971.
Cool.
Yeah.
Speaking of cool, sign up for our Sunday update. Guess what?
What?
We finally got it right. Big shout to Gabe. It went out today. And we have a young dog, a mix that's looking for its forever home that is not somebody's real dog, to our security team.
I will never get over that.
So if you follow Sunday Update, that dog that you saw today is actually really is looking for their forever home. It's not a mistake. And we're going to continue to do that every week. We think it's important to help animals that are in shelters escape the shelter and actually find a loving family.
I actually had to explain that to Margaret last night. I was like, look at what Anastasia's boyfriend did. Oh, my God.
Besides the animals in the Sunday update, there's recipes in there. There's behind-the-scenes looks, what goes on with OGGN. There's insider information on the actually market dynamics that nobody else gets. Very short videos. A big shout-out to Energy Rogue guys for putting that in there every week. And guess what's coming soon for the Sunday update?
Oh, what we got going on now?
Turbo Talk.
Oh.
So I have a podcast that I am recording from inside my car. I'm very safe, people, so no hate mail from the HSD people. This could be 12 minutes. Myself and Amanda LaBrie are the host, and it's just going to be fun. So stay tuned for that, but you can only listen to it in the Sunday update. So if I was you, I would go in the show notes of the show you're listening to right now and sign up for the Sunday update. It's free. And while you're there, might as well sign up for the Oil and Gas Events newsletter so you can see all the places.
Yeah, because we're going to be at OTC.
Oh, big shout out to Wings Travel for being an OTC sponsor. We're also launching 2 podcasts live from OTC this year. We're doing the hard launch of our Ben show, which is our young people's podcast. And we're doing the launch of our Connected Worker podcast. If you don't know what a Connected Worker is, then you ought to come to OTC and come check us out.
Yep. We'll definitely be there Monday.
Well, Paige and I will be there Monday because unfortunately we have to go through the trauma of going to a resort.
To go speak and do a podcast.
But the OGGN team will be at OTC, the entire team. And like always, we invite other podcasters in our space to come join us. Which, by the way, if you're a podcaster touches energy in any shape or form, I don't care if you have 10 downloads or 10,000 downloads. You want to come to OTC? I'm inviting you for free, helping you get press passes. You don't need to bring any gear. You come to our booth. You come record at our booth, meet the OGGN team, meet the OGGN hosts of the different shows, learn maybe some podcasting stuff. And if you have an energy podcast and you're looking for a sponsor, I can't imagine a better place for you to be to find one than an offshore technology conference, which is the largest offshore trade show in the world. So we'll be there. Actually, we're not even in a booth this year. We're in front.
Yeah. It's like S something.
I can't remember what it is, but we've grown to the point and we've driven so much success for the conferences we go to that now they're putting us front and center stage. So you can't miss us when you come in. You can walk by us no matter how you come into OTC. And if you're a listener, come by and stay hi and say you're a listener. We'd love that. We'll give you a laptop or hard hat sticker.
Yeah.
First Friday Q&A, you know the drill. Ask the questions. We use your questions on the air. You'll get a big shout out. The goal is not to stump Paige and I. We've been getting a lot of really good questions. So appreciate that from the listeners. Without the questions, we couldn't do that show. Ready to get out of here?
Yep.
Remember, folks, do great work, pay it forward, and we will see you next time.
Tune in next week for another informative and entertaining episode of Oil and Gas This Week podcast, a production of the Oil and Gas Global Network. Learn more at oggn.com.